When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Hello, Blanket Huggers. Stefan here. On March 28th, 2021, Josh and I received a message through our website's Submit a Sighting form from someone claiming to be Terry R. Rist, the man referenced in Hell Here and the man interviewed by Alan Greenfield in Secret Cipher of the Ufonauts. From there, we received a number of cryptic emails filled with information on places to search for answers to the larger mystery of the quest and journey Josh and I have been on. So we decided, fake or not, we should take it seriously, as much of the information given panned out and definitely opened our eyes to many new things. So we enlisted the help of Astral Stew co-host Santosh and Fearscape guest and Greenfield's publisher Olaf Phillips. Together, the four of us have been digging deeper and deeper into not only the true identity of our source of paranormal gold, whether he is the Terry Rist or not, but also into the mystery of the information given us. It has led us to some amazing doors into such things as the Secret Space Program, Hollow Earth, Darrow and Tarot, caves, underground bases, government cover-ups and conspiracies, and so much more. So if you would like to learn more about these emails, Terry's advice on where to look for more high strangeness, and our conversations and discoveries thus far, please become a monthly subscriber to our Patreon called Wristwatch at fearscapepodcast.com/support or patreon.com/fearscapepod. There you can get access to the emails themselves, the WhatsApp conversation about it all with Josh, myself, Santosh, and Olaf, and even any new clues that we have found. You can even join the investigation and add anything you have found to help us dive deeper into the mystery. You will also get access to other Fearscape-related things, such as extended interviews with guests not aired on the show, early access to Estes sessions with us and friends, and so much more. Wristwatch is a Patreon exclusive for our most dedicated fans. Join today and discover why the truth is now.
Thank you for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. We are on a journey to understand and to discover the phenomena that seems to exist all around the globe. We invite you to join us on this journey into the unknown.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another Out of This World and Then Back Into This World episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast here on the Fearscape Media Network. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by the lovely, bubbly, and Santosh's buddy. Well, he's my buddy, too. Josh Rutledge. What's up, Josh?
Hey, man. Nothing much. Just hanging out. Looking for UFOs.
Looking for UFOs. Yeah, that's another. I was like, we gave Santosh another shout out, and there's another one. We made up an improvised song back in the day, me and Santosh, with our friend Mike, called UFOs. So it was good. It was all about UFOs.
So there's a book that I'm listening to right now, written by tonight's topic character. He refers to the genome as the gnome.
The gnome?
Yeah. So he's like, we're currently underway trying to map the gnome.
Okay, so is it the author that says it that way, right? Or is it the guy reading it?
Yeah, it could be the guy reading it. It's the same guy. So I also have the Brainerd book about the center of the earth, and it's the same narrator that does that book too. And so, yeah, it could be him. So, because he mispronounces a bunch of things in several times. I'm like, you know, what goes into being a narrator for the books on Audible? Because I have several books where it'll read a chapter, and then the very next chapter it'll repeat and it'll read the exact same chapter again.
Sometimes it's not together, man. And I'm just letting you know, Audible out there, Josh and I are both voiceover actors. We do book narrations. We're on Audible, so hire us so that we don't say gnomes, okay? Now I might call a garden gnome for shizzle and gizzle, but that's about it. But no, you halfway referenced it. We've got a very, very interesting show. We've had a number of weeks with fantastic guests. Good God, have we had some great guests. Yep. But we're taking a break from some guests, and we are moving to a topic, and we are going to be covering something I've been wanting to cover for a long time, which is the, I don't even know how to refer to him, I guess alien, Valiant Thor.
Yeah, so the book refers to him as the finest leader from planet Venus.
There you go. The planet Venus, the Venusian. There we go. The Venusian himself, Valiant Thor. If you are not familiar with Valiant Thor, put your seatbelt on, get ready for a ride, because at one point this was probably one of the most famous aliens on Earth, like that lots of people saw and talked to.
Yeah.
So,
you know, on
and
Earth.
Writes books.
Right. You know, on Earth. Back home, he's just your average everyday guy.
Yeah, he's nobody.
He's, you know, your mild-mannered reporter back home. But on Earth.
Yeah, he's Valiant Thor.
Valiant Thor. Like, does he get to come up with that name?
I don't know.
Like, when he's on Venus, is his name like George?
Yeah.
But when he came to Earth, it's like, I am Valiant Thor.
Yeah, well, it's got to be some sort of alliteration. So if it's George, it's going to be like George Gnome. you gotta have the alliteration there. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about Valiant Thor. A very interesting topic to be talking about. Author, alien.
Indeed.
Indeed. But before we get to that, let's get into our topics, segments, and all that jazz. And the first one, of course, is Psychic Word of the Week.
And now, the Psychic Word of the Week.
All right, Psychic Word of the Week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary, coming from my girl, Junji Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, honey bear. So I have moved to the page 559. The phrase that I immediately see is shaped power.
Okay. So
this says, coined in Czechoslovakia under future science, it is condensed energy that comes from within the boundaries of specific forms and positions of matter. Energy is magnified due to the special form of the container or arrangement of the objects. Okay. So
that's not vague at all.
So it's basically power jello. And I know that sounds silly, but that's essentially what it is. It's like you could put your magic or energy into a jar, and it could therefore take the shape of that jar. It would be molded by that. It would stay, or you could say it would be, you could put power into a room and it's going to fill the entire room.
So I've got some 1980s cake pans, if y'all remember. Like, you know, your mom probably got, you know, the G.I. Joe cake pan.
Yeah, or the Star Wars ones. You know? Yeah.
So I'll get the Care Bear cake pan out, and I'll put my energy into the Care Bear cake pan.
Oh, yeah. Care Bear stare, dude.
Care Bear stare all day long.
Dude, hell yeah. And then you eat that? It's like you even get more of the energy.
Right. So,
but I don't know, you know, that may be something, you know, I think it's more akin to like I said, filling a room right with energy. I could see Reiki, like Santosh and I talk about filling a room sometimes with Reiki, so that when you walk in, you're just enveloped in it. So.
I mean, do you think that obviously being that it's in the encyclopedia for psychic terminology, it probably is. But do you think it is solely metaphysical in nature, or could like actual energy, you know, so not to say that metaphysical energy is not energy, but you know, like electricity, let's say, okay. could you change the shape of electricity by putting it through different shaped objects?
I don't know, because it doesn't imply that the energy changes the shape of other things, but that the energy itself is shaped.
That's what I'm saying. So like,
but I don't think energy is everything though, Josh. That's the hard part, because the energy that is metaphysical energy is the energy.
I know.
So
and also the energy in a jar is still
right
energy.
So technically yes, we can do that because we make Jell-O. Jell-O is energy. So
now I'm gonna go eat a pudding cup and
and just, you know, live life with that metaphysical
live life to the Jell-O-ist.
To the Jell-O-ist. I don't know. It's a short paragraph, and yeah. Ms. Junji Bletzer has passed away, so we'll never know.
We'll never know.
And I feel maybe like if I Google shaped power, I'm going to land on a porn, and I don't want that. So I'm just not going to bother with
it. Or something worse.
So listeners, if you want to, if you got a VPN, which, you know, you can get a VPN as one of our sponsors there. But if you have a VPN and you want to use it and you want to, you know, Google shared shaped power, go for it and let us know.
Let us know.
But I'm not going to do it. Anyways, let's get moving on. Let's get into a little bit of spooky news. All right, so we're doing spooky news this week because this article popped up in my feed, in my email box, like all over the place. And so it talks, the headline, this comes from the Daily Record in the United Kingdom, and it says, three Scots report UFO sightings in towns just 18 miles apart. The subheadline says, eagle-eyed spotters in Tullabody and Cumbernauld, just 18 miles apart, reported sightings to the Mutual UFO Network database in the space of a month. So we've got three separate UFO sightings that have been reported, including one in Tullabody in the space of a month. These latest unexplained sightings have all been registered with MUFON, and
I'm pretty sure it's Tullabody.
Tullabody. Well, it's Tullibody. Ach, Tullabody was the location. I'm not doing that again. Was the location for a sighting of what is described as a triangular shaped aircraft spotted on the evening of Friday, March 26. A witness who reported the sighting had been walking their dog when they spotted an orange colored light coming towards them from the southwesterly direction. The witness said,
my immediate thought was that there was a Chinese lantern, but it was moving too fast. Then I thought meteorite. It was bright orange and composed of three small triangles close together. I watched it until it disappeared into a bank of clouds. I moved on to think about it further when another one appeared from the same direction, same color, speed, and form. It moved smoothly without noise, no vapor trail, or no blinking lights. The second one is as if it was trying to catch up with the previous, put a spurt on, and gave off a little exhaust of the same color. The puff of the exhaust remained in the same place and left a little orange dot in the sky before it again disappeared into the cloud bank.
Well, I said I wasn't going to do it, but I did it anyways. The eagle-eyed spotter also added,
I know that this can be explained away logically.
And so
you gotta warn me.
I didn't know it was going to happen either. So, but that incident occurred at 8:30 on that night, reported to MUFON. They go on again talking about always thinking that they were Chinese lanterns, which, you know, of course we always were. It was like, is that a Chinese lantern? Or is that train thing? Right. Is that Musk train?
Yeah, the Musk. Which yeah, that's
also
like,
don't Google Musk. don't Google Musk.
No, that's
either.
A 70s porn if I've ever heard one.
So coincidentally,
mustache,
right? You know. So coincidentally, there was another mysterious sighting in the skies just 3 days earlier, 18 miles away in Cumbernauld. Someone spotted the sighting in the town on Tuesday, March 23rd, shortly after 9 p.m., and also reported it to MUFON. On this occasion, the witness was able to capture video footage of the incident. In the video, a white flickering light can be seen in the skies. The video footage lasts for more than 3 minutes. However, the spotter claimed that it remained there for more than 2 hours. And then the third sighting occurred also in Cumbernauld. This witness claims to have spotted an object that was moving from the north to the east and then changed direction back north before disappearing. Additionally, two small objects flashed above it. This incident occurred shortly before 9:30 on Wednesday, April 21st, and was reported to MUFON that same day. There's also video footage that was captured of this incident, and a white light can be seen flashing in the sky and appears to be coming out of some type of craft. However, it is not clearly identifiable from the video, and Stirlingshire has become a UFO sighting hotspot since then, with numerous reporting sightings even in the recent years. So, and it just goes on to talk a little bit about that area and the different UFO sightings over throughout the year. So very, very cool. Within a month, we have a small little flop.
It'd be a flap, wouldn't it?
A flop.
Oh, okay. That didn't go on.
The stretched out flop out of there. Flop. Flop. I can do that all day. So, but very, very interesting. Very cool. I love when you're getting multiple, and it looks like they all saw triangular shaped aircraft, of course, which is the new saucer, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So,
it's, you know, we went from Oreos to Doritos. We're progressing.
Oh, man. Yep. They had a cool ranch Doritos too, man.
The tortilla chips that are made out of black corn.
Yeah. Oh, man. I like the blue corn ones. Those are so good. So good. Anyways, now you got me wanting corn chips. So not a sponsor, generic corn chips. But anyways.
Is that a brand? Generic corn chips?
It is. It is. It's just my. Yeah. Okay. Stop me. Okay. We're going to move on to our final segment here, which is the UAP sighting of the week. All right, UAP sighting of the week, unidentified aerial phenomenon sighting of the week. You know, it's very similar to our spooky news, but that was a little bit different. We want to pull actually from, where are we pulling from? MUFON, New Fork this week? Or
actually, I'm pulling this out of the UFO Encyclopedia.
Ooh, so a historical. Clark. So we got a historical UFO sighting of the week. I like that. That gives it a little edge.
So this is... Jerome Clark wrote this series, and it's actually two books. This is the second edition,
which we've talked about with a number of our guests.
I mean, the third edition is crazy expensive, and there's no way I could ever buy it right now and hide the purchase. So, all right. So I did kind of what you all, you know, what you do with the encyclopedia, psychic encyclopedia, and I just kind of bibliomancied into page 174, which is the start of C. And the first one that grabbed my attention was actually called the Cash Landrum sighting, but it's 4 pages long. So instead, I'm going to read the Carter sighting.
All right.
As they stood outside waiting for a Lions Club meeting to start, Governor Jimmy Carter and 10 residents of Leary, Georgia, noticed an unusual bright light at about 30 degrees elevation in the western sky. Carter was to recall it appeared slightly smaller than the apparent size of the moon. It came close, moved away, came close, and then moved away. He reported. He estimated it to be maybe 300 to 1,000 yards away. It moved to a distance, then disappeared. The sighting took place on January 6th, 1969, between approximately 7:15 and 7:30 p.m.
Except for this sketchily rendered last detail, the object sounds very much like Venus, frequently mistaken for a UFO, in part because of an optical illusion which causes stationary astronomical bodies to appear to move back and forth. Indeed, the only real investigation of the incident conducted by debunker Robert Schaefer established Venus' presence in the section of the sky Carter was observing. In common with an earlier reporter, Tom Teed, Schaefer found that the other witnesses scarcely remembered the incident. The story surfaced in a Dublin, Georgia newspaper in September 1973. Carter told a reporter he attributed the phenomenon to an electrical occurrence of some sort. The sighting attracted much wider attention when Carter ran as Democratic candidate for president in 1976. The tabloid National Enquirer ran a sensationalistic account placing the incident in Thompson, Georgia in 1973, and mosquitoing witnesses in an effort to dramatize a not very exciting episode. Carter contributed to some of the confusion himself, placing the incident in October rather than January 1969, when he filled out a sighting report from the National Investigations Committee of Aerial Phenomenon. The correct date, which when found made possible a certain identification of the object, came to light in the course of Schaefer's inquiries. But also, as you know, Jimmy Carter was huge. You know, one of the things that he ran on, or one of the things that he said when he ran, was that he was going to bring all the government's UFO information to light.
Yep, so. That was a big deal to him because of that site. We've talked about that sighting a few times. I don't think we've ever gone into detail on it, so that was really cool. But yeah, very, very interesting. He's not the only president to have had a sighting, so
yep.
Even cooler, man. Very, very cool. Thanks for sharing that. All right, Josh, if you are ready, sir, we can move this choo-choo train. What was it? The Musk? We can
Musk train. Musk.
We
Musk
can move train. This Musk train into our topic of the week, which is Valiant Thor. So just stick around after the small ad break.
Hey, everybody. Stefan here. Wanted to let you know that this episode is sponsored by the great folks over at Box Mountain. Box Mountain is a subscription box service that has my favorite subscription box yet, the Cryptid Crate. Josh got one of these for his birthday this year, and let me tell you, I was super jealous. It was packed full of merchandise pertaining to cryptids. The box he got was all about the Flatwoods Monster, and it had this t-shirt, a book, a patch, a mug, and some awesome stickers. And let me tell you, it was well worth the value. These make an excellent Christmas gift that keeps on giving all year. If you use coupon code FEARSCAPE, you get 25% off the first month for any new subscription or 10% off on an individual purchase. So head over now to fearscapepodcast.com/cryptidcrate to get yours.
Ghosts in the Attic, Spies in the Basement is a paranormal true crime podcast.
If you enjoy tales of horror, lore, and the unexplained,
murders, mystery, and so much more,
tune into our bi-weekly podcast.
With us, your hosts, Anna Temperley
and Lindsay Behe,
through the Fearscape Media Podcast Network.
Available on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever else you may listen to your podcasts.
All right, we are back. Thank you guys so much for sticking around.
And yep. Man, I'm off the Musk train. I smell like a little bit of Old Spice and Stetson.
High karate. You got that high karate smell. For those of you born after 1989, you may not know what the hell we're talking about. So, but anyways, yeah. So we're going to be talking about Valiant Thor, which is really interesting because, of course, we got Thor is a very interesting name as being the Norse god of thunder as well as a superhero. And then Valiant, you know, you've got your stories of Prince Valiant. There was also Valiant Comics. I mean, there's some very interesting things here. Very interesting name. So what do we got? Talk to me, sir, about Valiant Thor.
Yeah, so basically in the late 1950s, the U.S. government had contact with a representative from Venus who went by the name Valiant Thor. There is a book that was written by Dr. Frank E. Strange.
Dr. Strange?
Yep. Called Stranger at the Pentagon.
So we got Dr. Strange and Thor. We're hitting all the Marvel goodness.
Which details much of the interaction that Valiant Thor was supposed to have had. Real quick, kind of informational anecdote here. I was watching a documentary on Amazon Prime about, it's called like The Underground, and it's about the guy who was speaking out about all the Dulce, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You finally got to see that? Because, yeah, I saw it years ago, and then they removed it.
Yeah, so it's finally back on Amazon Prime.
Or something like that.
Yeah, Philip something. Schaefer, maybe? Philip Schaefer? I think that sounds right. But anyways, so he has a picture in that he shows in that documentary that is his dad sitting next to Valiant Thor.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, Valiant Thor was all over the place for a while.
Yep. So, so it basically says, you know, when they asked him, let me back up a little bit. So, at about 8 a.m. on March 16th, 1957, Valiant Thor arrived in a ship which landed in Alexandria, Virginia, in an agricultural field. Thor was about 6 feet tall, 185 pounds, with brown, wavy hair and brown eyes. The police were the first on the scene and found him calm with only one request: to meet President Eisenhower. So they took him through the Pentagon, where he met with the Secretary of Defense and later with Eisenhower, Nixon, and all the Joint Chiefs.
And remember, we talked quite a bit about Eisenhower during the Majestic 12 episode. So.
Yeah. Valiant Thor remained in the United States for 3 years. And that he was, according to the book, he had been sent to Earth by the High Council to intervene on behalf of the intergalactic community. They were worried with our nuclear capabilities and how nuclear warfare could lead to the obliteration of the human race.
Which is a theme that we hear talked about quite a bit. So now I'm like, is Valiant Thor who kind of came up with that first concept that the extraterrestrials were visiting us because of the bomb being dropped?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I
wonder if that's the first that got
the first mention of that. I don't know. I'm trying to think back to other books that I've read that predate that, and yeah, I can't really come up with anything that off the top of my head that really talks about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to say Ray Palmer may have mentioned something about interest in our atomic weapons or something like that, or they called them atomics, I think, at the time.
It's interesting. But I forgot to tell you this too. This is just a sidebar. I purchased a book here recently about Ray Palmer, The Man from Mars. Ray Palmer's amazing pulp journey, and it's just basically about his life and stuff like that. So I wonder if there'll be some info on that in here. It'd be interesting.
Maybe.
I get to reading that.
So much of what I have here in the form of research actually comes from the book Stranger at the Pentagon by Dr. Frank E. Stranges, written in 1967. So most of this is interaction between Dr. Stranges and Valiant Thor, and then Valiant Thor giving his answers and feedbacks and accounts, if you will, to Dr. Frank E. Stranges, who then wrote it down.
Gotcha.
So when Dr. Stranges first met with Valiant Thor, he asked him where he was from, and he replied, "I am from the planet that is called Venus." He asked how many visitors from Venus were presently on Earth, and he said, "There are presently 77 of us walking among you in the United States. We are constantly coming and going."
Now, what year was this again? I apologize.
So he landed in 57. The book was written in 67.
Okay.
He stayed here for 3 years.
Right. So I was just curious as to where it lined up with Woody's, Derenberger's trip to Venus. And then also, what's his name? Buck Owen, I think, is that his name?
Yeah. So it's
also went to Venus. So
it's before the Derenberger.
Right.
Because Derenberger was 66.
I think Buck Owens was early 60s too.
So, you know, this was, but the, you know, Ingrid Cold was from Lanulos, which is not Venus. He just took them to Venus.
Yep.
But anyways, so the first meeting occurred, like I said, on March 16th, 1957, and said one of the finest leaders of the planet Venus, operating under the direction of the Central Control, who had been chosen to make contact as well as direct the project, landed his craft and was met by two police officers, weapons drawn. A thought transference quickly convinced them that he meant no harm, and he was ushered into the back seat of their patrol car. After crossing over into DC, they were met by the Secretary of Defense along with six of his staff members. Soon, police from every conceivable district and agency had joined in, all trying to claim the right to escort him to President Dwight D. Eisenhower. I just want to take a pause here and just note that this is the hypnotic or thought transference that is mentioned there to say I mean no harm. The amount of cooperation that is implied in just this one paragraph makes me think that it was more than just I mean no harm, right? It was more like a, you know, Jedi mind trick type situation. You'll take me to your leader type situation, you know?
Right.
Because, you know, here's these two officers that this craft has landed. They got their guns drawn and they hear in their minds, you know, I mean you no harm. And like, oh, sure, get in the back seat. We'll take you to meet our president.
Come on. Then,
and then every police precinct along the way is like, oh, we got to go. Like, I just imagine they're all like running in the streets trying to get to help escort Valiant Thor and what he must have projected with his mind in order to get that level of cooperation.
Right. And I just wanted to recant here real quick. Not Buck Owens. Buck Owens is the dude from Hee Haw. I meant Buck Nelson, the author of My Trip to Mars, the Moon, and Venus. So that's who I meant, not Buck Owens.
Okay.
But I'm trying to look here real quick. 1956 is when his book was written. So just curious. So, I'm not trying to say there's correlation. I'm just saying it's Venus was a hot ticket around that decade.
Well, I can't remember. There was a there was even a guy. I can't remember when it was. It was like early 1930s, I want to say. Who had all these like drawings and stuff of supposedly things he could see through his telescope of Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed like all these crazy artistic designs all over the place and, you know, naked people walking around everywhere and all this kind of stuff. And yet, and then of course, some years later, we sent probes to take pictures and found out it's a barren, wasteland. But
On the surface.
On the surface.
It's like that's always been the naked ladies thing because Venus was the, you know, the goddess of love and sexuality and stuff. So funny that that's what you're seeing. Okay.
So it goes on to say here that through his own version of the power of positive thinking, he was able to dismiss them all and soon passed through the security posts, followed by an Air Force captain. You know, does this story, did this influence George Lucas and the idea of that, you know, Jedi can just,
I don't know, you know, we've come across a lot of stuff that happened in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and we're always like, did George Lucas kind of like, is that where he got it? Because he was into pulp, you know, and different stuff which is where a lot of these stories lived, even though, you know, it's the same thing with like the National Enquirer. We always think it's all just made up stories, but no, they were legit looking for as much info as they could. Like they were trying to put out, they just didn't question it. Like that was the big thing.
But I mean, you know, this book was written in 67. Star Wars came out in what, 77?
Yeah, 77.
So, I mean, that's 10 years that he could have read this book and adapted mm-hmm. what it says here to be to fit within. Anyways, if anybody we're listening to happens to know George Lucas, ask him the question. Did he get his influence from
him? Him and I have the same birthday. Does that count?
So, so his it says here that his presence in the area had thrown everyone into a dilemma. The introduction he held from the High Council worried them because, though not written in any earthly language, their minds were given power to properly translate and inscribe the message.
Hmm.
A fictitious name is given here of Captain Gould. Asked him to remain, and after downing two plain bourbons, muttered, "My God, why couldn't have this happened on my day off?"
That's so dumb. That's so dumb. Close-minded.
Suddenly, the door opened, and six armed guards led Valiant Thor to what appeared to be an elevator. It went rapidly to the bottom-most level. Maximum security was in place. After transferring to an underground train, they sped towards the White House. Now, we know that there is a train that runs between the Pentagon and right. the White House.
Mm-hmm.
So, six officials, six armed guards, and three Secret Service men, 663, escorted him into the office of President Eisenhower.
Good old Ike.
So from behind the desk, President rose while the Secret Service men remained nervous and uneasy. As he extended his hand to shake that of the president, the Secret Service men drew their revolvers and pointed them at Valiant Thor. Following the nod of the president, they reluctantly lowered their guns. Standing in front of his desk, the president said, "Of course, you know we have suspended all rules of protocol. I have a good feeling toward you. Please, sir, what is your name? And where do you come from?" Thor replied, "I come from the planet your Bible calls the morning and the evening star, Venus."
He comes from Satan?
That's exactly what I thought when I read this.
No wonder all these people think that UFOs and aliens yeah. are just demons.
Right.
Thanks, Valiant Thor.
"Can you prove this?" the president asked. "What do you constitute as proof?" Thor replied. He quickly recorded, "I don't know. Will you come with me to my ship?" Eisenhower replied with, "My friend, I cannot come and go as I please. There are others to be considered. There are committees to be consulted and security measures to be adhered to. Please spend some time here with us. Let's gather. Let's be better acquainted. Learn more about one another. And perhaps soon, real soon, we shall see."
Bill Clinton would have done it. He'd been like, "Y'all doing you got the Venusians? Venusians? I'm there. I'm there.
Hey, get that new box of cigars over there.
We're going to Venus."
All right. So at that very moment, another gentleman rushed into the room. It turned out to be Vice President Richard Nixon.
Tricky dick.
He appeared to Thor to be very sharp, quick-witted, with fixed eyes and an amazing aptitude towards speed and proficiency. "My name is Thor," he said as the vice president thrust his hand in hesitation. "Without hesitation, you have certainly caused a stir from an out-of-towner." The vice president smiled as he continued, "Of course, we are not totally convinced of anything just yet, but suffice it to say, we are checking and double-checking everything you can do." After assuring them that this planet had been under close scrutiny for hundreds of years before the 1945 bomb blast, and with his special letter still in a slightly quivering hand of the president, he was requested to follow the Secret Service back the way they had come to the Pentagon and into a beautiful furnished apartment where he could spend the next 3 years. So they put him up in Watergate, and he was ready to go.
So now, is there, and this may be jumping the gun, but it's like, is there any proof that this happened? Is this documented?
So there are pictures that exist that presumably show Nixon and they show Nixon in a man, and that man is being identified as Valiant Thor.
Okay.
And the man in the pictures, I mean, they are, most of them are color pictures, but I mean, they're color pictures from, you know.
Yeah, so they were this, colorized.
Right. So, I mean, the man fits the description of, you know, tall and brown hair and brown eyes, but, you know, I don't know, other than, like, the books that he's, you know, written and things like that, I mean, I don't know if there's anything that exists, like an audio recording of him or pictures of his craft. I don't think that exists. And, you know,
It's like, I think he, you know, I think he existed, you know, I mean, like even IMDb like has him listed on here in an Ancient Alien episode. It says listed as self in the Mysterious Nine episode. So it's like they look at him enough to even say that that's a real person.
Yeah.
They don't list characters. So, it's just very interesting, but it's like, I just wonder, did that meeting happen? You know what I mean? It's like, has anyone tried to do a FOIA, like to try to find info on that meeting? Was there records kept, things like that? How did you get this information that's there? Is that just from Valiant Thor himself, or?
So I've got a little section here that talks about some photos that were taken. So it says soon after his arrival, together with three members of his crew, he joined a convention in the backyard of the home of Mr. Howard Menger, M-E-N-G-E-R, in High Bridge, New Jersey. The month was April 1957, so about a month after he introduced himself to the president. A certain group of individuals were interested in UFOs, were meeting that day, and Thor and his crew members, Don, Jill, and Tanya. Don is spelled with two N's, D-O-N-N. Jill's spelled the normal way you would spell it. And Tanya is T-A-N-Y-A-A. Y-I-A, excuse me. They had changed into some type of clothing worn by their Earth friends. The meeting was very interesting, and these people were on the right track. He was dismayed to learn the undignified manner in which these people were treated by the press. So he's a fan of ufologists. Nevertheless, these people were pursuing their beliefs, and this was good. A curious young photographer, August C. Roberts, snapped several pictures, thinking he was doing so without Thor's knowledge. The photographer seemed to be greatly troubled when he attempted to talk to him, yet it was those very photographs which were to bring me together with this unusual man on that cold December day. Mm-hmm. So this is me obviously being Dr. Strangis here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's all very, very interesting, man.
So holding the message from the High Council in his hand, the president stated that Thor's offer to help the human family would upset the economy of the United States and could plunge her into the abyss of chaos. In brief, he politely told Thor that the people of this planet were not ready to cope with such conditions as would come into existence if the recommendations of this unearthly visitor were put into action. So again, here's another case of, I'm not going to do what is probably in the best interest of everybody in the long run, because the American people aren't ready to hear it.
Right. Standard move, you know. But again, it's like there's got to be some documentation somewhere, because it's like, you know, we said that the UFO would landed and cops were there, so they had to have written a report. You know, those are the things that I'm interested in researching and tracking down are things like that, you know, because it's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Looking at these pictures here that showcase what is supposed to be Valiant Thor. It's all very...
It says here that he refused to advise the U.S. government regarding a bomb in the sky, which is now known as the Star Wars system.
Oh, interesting. Interesting, for sure. So that would have been 40 years later? 50?
Yeah.
30? Something?
But I mean, they started building the Death Star long before.
It was, you know. That was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Yeah. So.
So apparently he also had a miracle garment. It says that in his apartment, he was able to maintain communications with his ship and was kept informed of the growing world tensions. His uniform underwent rigid tests at that time. By today's standards, they would now be obsolete. They attempted to penetrate the material with a diamond drill bit, but it snapped under pressure. Acid rolled off the uniform and burned a hole in the floor.
Choo!
They fired a high-velocity rifle at the uniform, but it failed to pierce it. The report to the president read, physical appearance, soft silver, gold, lustrous fabric. Unknown weight is 6 ounces total, including boots. Was a close fitting like a tunic, no cuffs, pockets, buttons, zippers, clips, or hooks. RXT2 tests, indestructible.
Again, it's like, did we use some of this stuff? Like, is that where something like, you know, like not Kevlar, but whatever they're looking at that's supposed to be better than Kevlar, things like that, you know, makes you wonder.
So, you know, and it would be so hard to, but if there was a report to the president for the testing of this, you know, uniform, that report should exist. Exactly. Somewhere for a FOIA. But the problem with a FOIA is that you have to provide exact dates or close to the same dates of when the document was produced.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that this goes into, you know, when they actually tested his when they tested his uniform. So I guess now I'm going to have to get the actual book and read the entire book, but but maybe it's in there somewhere. But yeah, so they had one more test to try, and they fired a laser at his suit, and a bright-eyed colonel is what it says here. Started to just have a conversation, and when the light waves hit the suit, he was in utter dismay because the ray was totally ineffective against the garment. So it really is indestructible.
It's like Superman's cape.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, the explanation here of these, you know, physical appearance is soft silver and gold lustrous fabric, and it fits like a tunic. I mean, that sounds even like the a lot of the examples and descriptions given for early contactees when these men would get off these ships and they were wearing coveralls or a shiny suit or whatever the case may be. So.
Yeah, we've heard that a few times, but it's also interesting because at this time, this was in terms of the contactee movement. This is when we were seeing a lot of humanoids, right? They just looked human. They didn't look any different, though some could tend to be tall, and those were the blondes, right?
Right.
Tall and blonde and things like that. But yeah, that's what's very interesting about him is that he just looks human, and this kind of fits some of those older conspiracy theories that, like Lanulosians and things like that, they left the Earth at some earlier point and landed elsewhere.
Well, it's really interesting. I'm listening to a book right now written by Valiant Thor. It's called Secret Bases Underground or something like that. But in the early part of the book, it talks about how 85% of these souls that are currently inhabiting the Earth are actually from a planet called Maldok, something like that.
Yeah, don't Google Malduk either, because... But Maldok, you're fine.
But Maldok, and Maldok was a planet that was destroyed because the race of beings that were on Maldok, they constantly sought out power, and they were aggressive beings and all that kind of stuff. And so there, it basically says that through the phases of reincarnation, 85% of the Earth is now inhabited by people from Maldok.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, yeah. I will say that I've read, or I guess listened to technically speaking, this is my second book written by Valiant Thor. Both are very full of all kinds of great information so far, and references to a lot of great books that will be adorning my bookshelves sometime in the near
future.
Yeah,
you know who I bet has some really great information on this is Olav.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of times when I search Valiant Thor Secret Space Program shows up quite a bit, you know, that this is one of those catalysts for the Secret Space Program.
Yep.
With Valiant Thor and him, you know, providing technology and the like. I bet you Olav has some really cool stuff. Olav, if you're listening, go us and hit us up in that WhatsApp chat. I want to know. We may share it with Worst Watch. So,
but yeah, so that colonel that tried with the laser and failed apparently spent the next several hours talking to Thor about nuclear fission and the atomic bomb, and giving Thor a breakdown on how atomic weapons worked.
The atomics.
So here's an interesting anecdote. Apparently, he went to Cuba and met with Fidel Castro.
Oh boy, this is before the Bay of Pigs, so I guess we're good.
Yeah,
we're good. Or maybe that's why he's gone, because they were like, no, you are now a communist sympathizer, you can stay in Cuba.
I mean during with all that stuff going on, it does make you wonder if maybe they kicked him out because of maybe what he was trying to tell them to do, like to demilitarize and all that kind of stuff.
Right, because you're like, why did he just come to America? Did he go to Russia? I mean, maybe Cuba was that passport to it.
Yeah. Let's see. It says that Thor worked with a person named Nancy Warren. She was one of the only few since his arrival at the Pentagon in whom he was able to discern an honest and open heart, and who loved Almighty God, her country, and her fellow man.
Amen.
When he was inside the Pentagon, many Earth people live one life openly, while in their hearts and minds they live quietly another. Double-mindedness seemed to be a way of life in the Pentagon building that served as a busy nerve center for our nation.
Still happens.
Yep. Thor once remarked to me that he had never witnessed in one central location such concentrated confusion.
Boy, he should go now. Like, what has been like the last couple really? Decades, man? Shoo!
Was that the Pentagon or is that the Senate? I don't know.
All of it. All of it.
So apparently this Dr. Frank Strange's guy is also a pastor. And so there is actually quite a bit in here about God and Jesus and
Well, and that was a big theme again. Like, was this you know, these early contactees, you know, again, Indra Gold, big old Christian, like they worship the Christian God, which never made sense because Jesus came onto Earth way after they supposedly left, but whatever. Svenborg, that we talked about, the guy that floated around to all the different planets and stuff in the 1800s and stuff like that. He was finding all these aliens that believed in his God, and it was some of the same rituals and the things like that. And now here we are again. Like, that was a central theme. And I kind of feel like that was just a cover-up. It was like, here's a thing to make you okay, because right. back then that panic did exist that it would destroy religion as we know, right? Which back then was apparently only Christianity. And so that may have been a thing. It's like, no, look, guys, they follow Jesus too. Like, it's cool. It's fine.
Well, there's a little section in here that this doctor, our strangest guy, wrote. It says, he told me that his purpose is coming was to help mankind return to the Lord. He spoke in positive terms, always with a smile on his face. He said that man was further away from God than ever before, but there was still a good chance if man looks in the right place. He told me he had been here nearly 3 years and would depart in just a few months, claiming that he would not use force to speak with men and authority in America. He was happy to consult with them at their invitation. He further stated that thus far, only men in Washington knew of his existence in the Pentagon. So he goes on to say, and a few leaders had availed themselves of his advice during the past 3 years. He felt there was still so much to do, yet his time of departure was getting near. He told me that Jesus Christ would not force men to be saved from their mistakes, even though he had already made a way for mankind to be redeemed through his shed blood. When I asked him where he was from, he replied, "I am from the planet that is called Venus." I asked him how many visitors from Venus presently. He said, 77 are walking amongst you and constantly coming and going. During the next 30 minutes, he told me about the things about myself that I did not know.
I didn't know I had blonde hair.
He said later he was able to verify them with his parents and grandparents.
That kind of information. Okay, that makes a little more sense. I take my joke back.
Yeah. He gave me information regarding the gravitational pull of Venus in comparison to Earth. I was informed that the abdominal muscles hold flesh firm against the mild gravitational pull, which is 3/20 less than that of Earth. He gave me information which would be revealed to others over a period of years. He said the only thing that he said that troubled me was his use of the expression "when the time is right" in response to my question as to whether or not I would see him again. He also apparently had no fingerprints.
Okay.
So yeah, there's that. So he goes on to say that we discussed the merits of Jesus Christ, how he gave his life freely so that men could enjoy the benefits of eternal life. I questioned him about the Bible on Venus, and he assured me that a personal, unbroken fellowship with the author did not necessitate the printing of a book. He found it amusing that many theologians attempt to discredit both Jesus Christ and the Bible. The very God many have said is dead continues to lavish them with all these good things. Perhaps they will in time permit the spark of divine light to again illuminate their troubled hearts. In answer to my question of what he thought of Jesus Christ, he said, "I know that Jesus is the Alpha and Omega of yours and everyone else's faith."
Man, it troubles me. You know, well, once we get into the just theological aspects of it, that's where I just get hesitant. I don't know.
Well, and you know, there's a theory that I read somewhere and I can't remember where, but that Jesus was a Venusian.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I've heard that as well.
And I've also heard that that Jesus is a title.
Like Dread Pirate Roberts?
Like Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay.
Yep. And so
like terrorist.
And so, you know, he just there were several Jesuses sent around the cosmos, all in an effort to enlighten people and heighten their consciousness, so to speak.
Sure.
In an effort to elevate the people of that planet.
Right.
So you know, if I break this down, this line here, I know that Jesus is the Alpha and Omega of yours and everyone else's faith. But that just, to me, says that Jesus is whatever Alpha and Omega, beginning and end, I guess, of the faith.
Right.
Like, but
I don't know. There's a lot of theory, you know, that Jesus was simply just another Buddha, you know, that, you know, that it's this interdimensional healing deity that has incarnated into various forms, Buddha being one, Christ, because especially because Buddha and Jesus have such similar thoughts and teachings in a lot of ways. So,
well, something else that is in that book that I'm listening to right now that came up was there apparently are, which we've talked about them before when we talked about the Shaver mystery, these I can't remember what they're called now. They're basically like a hodgepodge of body parts. I can't remember what. Do you remember what they're like? They have the lower part of a goat and the upper part of a man. It's like,
oh, the chimera? Called
something specific.
Chimera?
No, it's called something else. It's called something else. But anyways, now it's gonna bug me. I want to say synthetics, but I don't think that's right. But that they basically are constructed, and then they serve as a vessel for beings from the astral plane to inhabit.
Mm.
And when they're in those vessels, then they can walk around and interact in the physical realm. And so it made me think, you know, and I'm probably going to offend some of our listeners here, but the fact that Jesus really didn't do anything until he was 30 years old, you know.
Yeah.
I've always questioned if he just lived a normal life as a man and then he was inhabited by something else.
Yeah, I've seen that before as well, because the childhood stories, even the ones that made the cut for the Bible, still seem out of place, much like they did in the Gospel of Thomas that didn't make it and things like that, you know, like... It just seems so weird. All of a sudden, you know, he's teaching people at the synagogue and things like that. It seems out of place. It doesn't fit with the rest of the adult narrative. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm with you on that. And I was thinking again, I was like, was it Synthezoid? Is that what you're thinking?
No, I don't know. I'll have to go back and read. but yeah, so the other thing that I always thought about is you know, was he a practitioner of Reiki?
There's a lot of theory there, because a lot of healers that are like that New Age kind of era where Christ is just another deity to call upon and things like that. There's a lot of Christian themed Reiki, because they do believe that that's kind of possibly what Christ was using, was a more, because like we said, we know that Asui gave us the symbols that he said, but he said that there were thousands of them when he discovered Reiki, that they had already existed, they were out there. And so maybe someone like Christ or Buddha that was able to perform these miracles had access to these other symbols, who knows, for sure.
So moving off of this theologic then they got into a conversation around life on other planets, and Thor's reply was, there is life on many other planets of which people of Earth know nothing. There are more solar systems for which man is not given credit. There are many beings that have never transgressed the perfect laws. Man does not possess the right to condemn the whole of God's creation, because he himself has broken the perfect laws of God through disobedience. A lot of other God stuff here. So, Dr. Strange has asked...
I mean, Thor is a god, right?
Yeah. Asked him what he would do if the military prevented him from leaving on the appointed day. He simply said, Frank, do you remember one day after Jesus arose from the dead, he had gone in search of several of his followers? They closed themselves in a locked room, and suddenly they saw Jesus standing in the very midst of them. He then smiled and looked at me as if to imply, need I say more? So I guess he can do whatever he wants, is what he's trying to say.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he says he turned to leave the room, and he simply said to me, please keep your faith and leave the same way that you came in. Continue to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of the things Will in time be added to you and yours?
Basically said, don't let the door hit you where the Lord split you. Basically what he said.
Yeah. So, you know, going on to say, you know, the guy who wrote it, Frank, I began to wonder who would believe me if I ever told of a strange encounter with a man from another planet. I first considered not repeating this extraordinary story, but the more I thought about it, the more I prayed about it, the more I felt that it would bring a great blessing to those who would hear and read it.
I mean, just all that already makes me surprised there's not like a, well, there may be, we'll have to ask Nathan, I'm sure he knows, but a cult.
Yeah.
You know, of not worshiping Valiant Thor, much like Svenborg. It wasn't worshiping Svenborg. It was still worshiping Christ. It was just through his techniques and his ways. I'm surprised there's not like a Valiant Thor church following.
Well, and if I put on my salesman hat, right?
Boop, there it is.
And I my salesman hat. By the way, it's the old style. Visor with the green, you know, the green visor.
Oh, yeah, like the like they used in old poker games and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's my salesman hat. So, I would say that this particular tale might have netted this individual quite a few additional Congregationalist? Is that the word?
Sure.
Because he could say, see, here's a conversation that I have with somebody who doesn't live on this planet, but yet still worships the Almighty God. So
interesting. Yeah. And it's crazy the amount of books that Valiant Thor has out there. You know, you're like, is it the same Valiant Thor? Or did other people just be like, well, there's no proof that this guy actually existed. I guess I could be Valiant Thor. But I see a number of them, you know, especially dealing with Vril. You know, Vril is something that pops up in our conversations quite a bit as well. And there's a number of books written by Valiant Thor about using the power of Vril. So.
Yeah, I mean, I just, for a long time, I thought Valiant Thor was a channel.
I thought Bashar type thing? Yeah. No. Well, I mean, I had never heard of it. The very first time I ever heard of it was from that extraterrestrial podcast. Is when I first heard of Valiant Thor. So I guess I knew right away that it was a man that was supposedly existed. So,
on March 16th, he left. He departed. He says he dematerialized and departed from this phase of his earthly mission. His next stops was the outskirts of Alexandria, Virginia, where his ship and crew awaited his arrival, hidden by a wooded area. It was no problem for him to reassemble the atoms of his body inside his ship. So he was beamed away, basically. Mm-hmm. As his craft slowly rose, a number of people stopped and pointed excitedly in his direction. Others stood motionless, transfixed by the sight which they beheld. He felt such a tremendous feeling of love for all of them. There was no panic in them, just curiosity and a strong desire to know more. Then, as the Air Force jets were scrambled, with the force field now in full use, the plane darted past the ship, unable to see them now. Interesting there. So they basically phased out of our visible light.
Yeah. Which is even what have we seen?
Yep. Even ground radar lost them on their equipment. Confusion once again reigned. On the way back to Victor One, he meditated on his home planet. The low, heavy, colorful clouds, the even temperatures, the perfectly diffused sunlight that made shadows almost non-existent, the lushness of the rich green grass surrounding his home. He was informed of several Earth people with whom he would maintain contact for a long time into the future.
You know, it's almost as if this dude was like an ambassador. You know, so then I look at things like Woody going to Venus and Buck Nelson going to Venus and things like that. It's like, you'd think he'd be the guy they'd meet.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I've always said. It was Aindrid, an ambassador.
Right.
You know, was, you know, or all these things just, or all these people, let's say, were they just sent to meet open-minded individuals in hopes that if they can convince enough of them to change their ways, kind of like what Greer's going after, right, with his 1% meditation thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get 1% of the people to change the way they think, can you change the way the direction of the planet?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it is definitely something I think. I mean, I know, which, by the way, if you haven't watched yet, Astral Stew, we talk about it on this month's episode, so you can dig into that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe if they have shaped power, they could shape that energy into worst callback ever. I was trying to shape that power into a container that didn't work. I don't know. But yeah, it's so interesting. It's like, so the more and more I dig into Valiant Thor, the more and more I feel dissuaded against him being here, which is interesting because when I first learned about Valiant Thor, I was like, this dude was here.
Yeah. Well, and what's really interesting in one of the pictures that exists of him, he's sitting next to Rear Admiral Richard Byrd. Oh, which,
that's interesting.
If the name doesn't sound familiar, he was the first person to map the both poles, I think. I think he did both poles, north and south. And he also is one of the big proponents for Hollow Earth because he claimed to have found an entry point into the Earth.
Yep, where he saw many UFOs going in and out of.
Yep.
Yeah, and that there was this travel system that was able to go from the North to South Pole quickly.
Yep. So, basically, in the end, he was sent back to Earth to live amongst the people, to work in, you know, in Earth it just says to labor in Earth Enterprises.
Yeah, like publishing. We got it.
to help those who encounter possible threat or danger while striving for world peace, to give them advice and guidance, to entrust with superior knowledge those who have proven themselves, divulge the essence of their mission to the collective national leaders of Earth, only when the time is right.
I don't know. Maybe it's now, because I'm already thinking, I'm like, has anyone researched the publishers of his books to find out what info do they have on said Valiant Thor? Like, there's an avenue that I wonder if anyone's dug into yet. Olav, have you?
What are you talking about? I'm going to get off the, we get it done here, I'm going to go look it up. So
that's why I said the time is right, because we're about to look into it. That's exactly my whole point. It's like, hey, Valiant Thor, man, come on. I would love to meet you and talk to you, and you are always welcome on our show.
Yep.
But.
So, yeah. So that's, other than, like you said, he has written quite a few books. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the one I'm reading now is all about secret bases underground. One of the other ones I read was about all the different, for lack of a better term, creatures, mm-hmm. and how to contact them, all the different alien species and how to contact them.
Yep.
So it's a very, very interesting, some of the stuff that he's written. And also some of the stuff that he's written is very, like, I'm in the book that I'm hearing now, it harkens back to another book that I read that you found that's like, was a from Palmer and Barker and Brainerd. It was like, creatures and something. I don't remember. It was like
looking at it on my thing right now. It says, hold on, strange creatures from time and space.
Yep. So, yeah, there's some stuff that was mentioned in that book that's also mentioned in this book. So anytime, I guess, that you have corroborating information across different timelines,
But yeah, I'd be interested to follow the money trail too. Like, where are the royalties going?
What you're going to find out is that Ingrid Cold and Valiant Thor are the same person.
Yeah, they're all the same dude. Buck Owens from Hee Haw.
Buck Rogers.
So. Salute! And that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. But thank you, Josh, for all that great information on Valiant Thor. Like he was saying, Amazon is littered with books on and about Valiant Thor, as well as written by Valiant Thor. There's quite a bit on Kindle as well. So you can check all those out. But Josh, let's go ahead and start wrapping things up, sir. Thank you again for all that great information. If anybody out there, if you listeners out there, you guys have some more information, some interesting tidbits, feel free to share those on those posts or on the fan group page about that, because, you know, we don't read 10,000 Google pages and books and things like that. So there may be some really cool stuff that we missed that I'd be interested to hear about. So share your information with us. We'd love to hear it. Wanted to talk quickly again about Wristwatch, our Patreon. You can go to fearscapepodcast.com/support, or you can go to patreon.com/fearscapepod. There you can join Wristwatch, which is our Patreon. We have some members there. We've got some really cool stuff that's only Patreon only. We are digging into the mystery of Terry Wrist in these very interesting emails, as well as all the avenues that it's taken us on. And it's me, you, Olav, and Santosh. We've been digging into it. And we've been in contact with Alan Greenfield and another one of Olav's friends, some of our other friends, Penny Royal. I mean, there's just different things. All of the stuff is seemingly starting to come together, and we're continuing on sharing our mystery and our journey with you guys. That is a Patreon only, as well as other Fearscape related things. It's not just for Wristwatch. It's just a fun name to go through that mystery. But yeah, it's like we've got the extended Tyler Strand interview is going to be dropping there soon. So we recorded a whole nother 30 minutes with Tyler Strand that never made the air. We're going to be airing that. You can only get access to that via Patreon. So again, make sure to go to fearscapepodcast.com/support. That's the easiest way to go. And of course, all that money that is made through those monthly installments, those help us just create a better show, travel, and all of that jazz. Much like I said last time, we've got the birthday fundraiser going on. We're trying to put together this incredible pilot TV show with Santosh, Josh, and myself. You can find that on the Fearscape Media and Fearscape Podcast Facebook pages. There should be a link there. It's a Facebook fundraiser there. We're trying to raise some money for that. So if you want to donate that way instead of becoming a monthly supporter, you can do it that way. There's all kinds of great ways that you can support us, or hell, just hit us up at PayPal. You know what I mean? Fearscapepodcast @gmail.com. But I'm done off my money box. But I just wanted to mention that, because Wristwatch, some really cool things have been happening as usual, and we want to share that stuff with you. Of course, make sure you're checking in our YouTube page to check out Astral Stew. Really crazy episode this month, talking about Beans, Mothman, and Dr. Stephen Greer. So you don't want to miss that. It's such a pleasure for us to be able to record with Santosh every month for such a fun YouTube show. But we're going to get out of here. But before we do, Josh, I wanted to get into a listener story. We haven't had one in a few weeks, but we've got one here that I wanted to go over. Give me a second here. Here it is. This comes from a woman named Brenda from Texas, and she actually sent us in a listener story about the Black Eyed Children. So, you know, we did an episode on that ages ago, but there are still new Black Eyed Children sightings all the time. It's one of our hottest episodes because it's it's crazy how people seeing us. But this is Brenda's story.
When I was living in Plainview, Texas, I had two encounters with Black Eyed Children. One was standing along the side of the road alone in the middle of a freak snowstorm. I pulled up beside him and rolled the window down, and I talked to him. He looked at me and had the most disturbing eyes. They were solid black. He asked me if I could take him to the trailer park I lived in, and I told him no. And I left as quickly as I could. Then my second encounter was at the mobile home I was living in. I was leaving to head to work not shortly after, and this kid, about 4 to 6 years of age, just started tapping on my window. It asked me if I was his mommy. No, I told him to go away. I'm busy. Wrong mistake, buddy, because that night I got caught in a severe blizzard. And guess who shows up again? but that little boy, and tells me that if you're not my mommy, you're gonna die. Sure enough, I look up and there's a semi coming straight for me. These kids, I'm telling you, they have extremely soulless eyes. And whatever you do, do not encourage them or allow them to join you in your home or travels. It's extremely dangerous. But when they warn you, you keep your eyes open.
Wow. Keep your black eyes open, I guess.
That's frightening, yeah. It's like, because you don't want to let them in because there's danger there. But you don't want to not let them in either because then there's danger there. So it's just,
And also, it's, you know, they're kids. I mean, it's hard to turn a blind eye to kids.
Especially in a snowstorm. On her for... I'm saying this as someone who's a big believer in black-eyed children. I'm not saying leave children on the side of the road, y'all. But I'm just saying, good on you for knowing what you were seeing and getting out of there, because you may not have gotten out of the way of that semi. If you had taken that extra moment to let that kid in that car... That could have been all the time that was needed for that semi to slam into you.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, what are the people that do let them in the car?
I know.
Do we have stories?
I mean, is that where some of these unsolved murders take, you know, that we have no answers?
Disappearances.
For?
Yeah.
I don't know. We need to ask the girls from Ghosts in the Attic, Bodies in the Basement. See, because I'm sure they'll end up touching on the black-eyed children at some point, because I want to know, is there any true crime stuff that correlates with possible black-eyed children? That's what I want to know. So Anna and Lindsay, if you're listening, let me know. I want to be on that episode. That's all I'm saying. But speaking of which, there, of course, you can send your listener stories to us at fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or just anywhere that you can find us. Send those stories to us. You can send audio or you can send text. And make sure you're checking out fearscapemedia.com, where all of our host of other podcasts exist. Such great podcasts out there. Like I said, Ghosts in the Attic, Bodies in the Basement, one of our newest and best podcasts. It's absolutely phenomenal if you like true crime and the paranormal.
Yep. And we have a new app.
Woo, it is fancy schmancy. Let me tell you guys, we had a test beta app that we had out before. We didn't like it, but we were testing it. That's what we were doing. But this new one is crispy.
I have it installed on my phone, obviously. Why would I not have my own app installed?
Mm-hmm, me too.
And the other day, I don't remember which one it was, but one of the pods on the network dropped a new episode, and I got a notification on my phone.
Me too. Yeah. That's where I listen to all the other network podcasts. That's where I listen to them all straight off the app.
So if you want to know, you know, what's going on the network, download the app. It's available in the Play Store right now. It'll be coming for Apple soon. And
it's not like we're working on getting it to Apple. It's just taking time to get onto Apple as it usually does, but it'll be there soon. And go to Google Play. It's free download. Have some fun. Listen to everybody's podcast. And there's links to support us. There's links to go to our Redbubble store to get any, you know, products or things like that. But we love you guys. But we're going to quit hammering today. We're going to get out of here. We got a lot of stuff to Google that we ain't supposed to be Googling, so we're going to be checking that out. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. We love you guys so much. We're going to get out of here. Again, thank you for listening to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast here on the Fearscape Media Network. This has been Stefan, and hey, keep your eyes on the skies.
This has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight, because things tend to get spooky when you're listening to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We hope you have enjoyed this guidepost on the road of high strangeness with us. And we thank you, as always, for listening and joining our caravan to the weird and unknown. Please consider supporting us as we continue our journey to find the answers we all seek. Fearscapepodcast.com/support.